the highest level of tumah, the greatest degree of something that is impure, the dead body, right? So anybody who comes...
Wait, it's not feminism?
No.
This is the Chochmat Nashim podcast on JewishCoffeeHouse.com. Because Judaism is better when women are heard. Now, here are Rachel Stomel, Ann Gordon, and Shoshana Keats-Jaskal.
Hello, and welcome back to the Chochmat Nashim podcast. I'm Ann Gordon, here today with...
Rachel Stomel.
And Shoshana Keats-Jaskal.
Since you last heard from us, a lot has changed for, well, all of us. In Israel, we're largely confined to our homes with our families. I don't even want to get into too many details because the odds are just as good that by the time you hear this, the guidelines, as they're called in Israel, for what can be called self-isolation will have changed. In fact, in the time since I wrote this, and now when we're recording it, things have already changed. Suffice it to say, schools are off. Most jobs have people working from home or not at all. Some people are still at work. Everyone knows that this is unprecedented. In many ways, it's all anyone is thinking about. Whether you're adjusting your life to work from home, to entertain your children and keep them educated and exercising and eating healthy, the activity on social media has exploded. The number of creative ideas for engaging education, both Jewishly themed and not, it's truly inspiring. The number of memes is just astounding, beginning with the scenes bereft of almost all people except for Waldo, who is now an easy find. This begins, or it brings us back to when we started with all of this and the hand washing, right? The great concern that we have is that we don't want to spread coronavirus so that nobody should get COVID-19. Everybody knows this. We hope you're all healthy. Thank God right now, as of this moment, we're all healthy. The hand washing has taken on a life of its own. Between the songs that people sing to make sure that they're washing for at least 20 seconds, between the memes about... Again, you know, we don't even need to tell you. But because of that, we thought that we would try to take a step back and have a conversation about hand washing in Judaism, in history. We can't avoid the fact that the coronavirus is on everybody's mind all the time, to greater and lesser degrees of management and tension and so on. At the end of the day, we don't want to talk about it because we know you can't get away from it. We're going to talk near it. So we're going to talk about hand washing. Shoshana, I think you had some interesting research there.
I think we're going to start first with our troll and our fear good.
Oh, so that sense. Yeah, please do.
Times have changed and you can see that we're doing this differently. You probably hear that we're doing this differently, but the troll and fear good shall not change. So our first...
I'll just mention, for those of you, just to be aware, we're all on Zoom. We're not in the same room. Usually we record in the same room and there are four of us now on Zoom, Rachel, Shoshana, and I. And Scott, our main man producer from the JewishCoffeeHouse.com, is doing his same modulating of all our voices and making sure that we're staying on track. Again, a fourth window on Zoom.
First, our troll. I just wish Skajask, that's me on Twitter, and Chochmat Nashim would just come out of the closet and say that they're at war with the Orthodox. I'd respect that. Why pretend to be friends of the Orthodox when they're just stabbing them every chance they can get? They're like the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization, friendly to our face.
It's nice that amid all of the different changes that we have of, you know, everything's not routine, that we can always rely on the fact that there will be trolls.
Things will never change.
So things will be constant and stable. And that's a really nice thing for us. So thank you, troll.
Thank you, troll. Our fear gun. Although I cannot say this publicly, I want to say that I'm happy my daughters will be growing up in a world where women like you exist. Thank you. That was a private message on actually our Instagram. And it's meaningful when someone who feels they can't say it out loud still says something. And we hope that hopefully people will be able to say things out loud and not worry about those things. So thank you.
So I guess I'll take off here. So hand washing in Jewish life, Jewish law. So it's a lot more than just washing for bread, which most people are familiar with, are washing Nagel Wasser, which is, you know, the hand washing in the morning. There's lots of times we wash our hands. You know, when I learned this first in school, I was surprised, you know, that you wash your hands after all sorts of things, after touching your shoes, after scratching your hair, after cutting your nails. There's so many things. And we're all now talking about washing our hands for cleanliness reasons. There's also all sorts of other reasons why we wash our hands in Jewish law, which are not related to cleanliness in the physical dirt sense, but also related to cleanliness in the sense of spiritual cleanliness, or the laws of Tahara and Tum'ah, or the concept of ruach ra, which is a bad spirit, which maybe we'll delve into later. What does that mean? So yeah, so Anne, I wanted to know if you could maybe give us a bit of an explanation of what all this means.
Well, I think the first thing that we just need to remember is that we live in a world where virtually we do not engage in a question of tuma and tahara. The laws of purity and impurity, I think in some ways they dominated like the ancient Jewish world in the time of the Mikdash, in the time of where people would bring sacrifices and the Kohanim would eat their portion in sanctity. And that meant that they had to go to the mikveh. And that meant that they had to avoid some basic bodily functions and some contact with the highest level of tuma, the greatest degree of something that is impure, the dead body, right? So anybody who comes—
Wait, it's not feminism?
No. Not feminism. No, Rachel, it's not feminism. The highest level of tuma, the greatest degree of something that is impure, is a dead body. There's a whole range of things, however, that constitute impure, that if you touch them, then they render you, the person who touches them, impure. And that includes creepy crawlies. It includes— the list is long, but also so far removed from our religious experience today, because we don't have a temple and we don't keep the laws of purity and impurity, with very little exception. The aspect of family purity is its own category, but it's not relevant to things like eating kudshim, eating from sacrifices, because we don't do that now. So why does this have to do with washing your hands? The issue is that the same way that somebody would render their whole body pure by dunking in a mikvah, right? They use water to render themselves pure. You have to wait, whatever, but then you're pure. So with washing, the idea is that you're washing your hands in preparation for example, whatever activity needs to be done. The Kohanim wash their hands and feet multiple times during the avoda, during the temple service. And we now wash our hands, particularly before bread, commemorating or keeping that practice alive, even though the dead body tuma is still in the world. Let me take a step back and say the way we get rid of it is by having a paraduma, the red heifer. And since we cannot do that because we do not have a mikdash through which to offer such a karban, such a sacrifice, the fact that the impurity of the dead body that every single one of us has come in contact with, because it's just in the world, though it's never been removed until there's a red heifer to remove it from the world, it's very complicated. It feels like I'm saying mumbo jumbo, but I'm not. Meaning this is the practice, but it's so far removed from our experience. So the idea is, it's hard to say that our religious practice is symbolic, but it is commemorative, I would say. We hold on to it to keep this recognition of what the practice was in the Beit HaMikdash. We keep it alive. The Netilat Yadayim in the morning, though, part of it is you refresh yourself as you begin the day, whatever. But there's a notion that one of the reasons that we wash in the morning is to remove Ruach Ra, right? You mentioned that, Rachel. And what does the Ruach Ra mean? One possibility is when you are sleeping, the Gemara calls that 1/60th of death. And the same way that the death is impure, so 1/60th of death, so we wash our hands. We're not going to go for a full-blown mikvah dunk every morning, but we're not going to just like say, okay, we got up and we're going to carry on our day with as much tuma, that 60th of death amount of tuma that we might have on our hands. It's not the only reason that we wash Negel Vasser. There's a whole bunch of reasons that people give, but that is one of them. And I think it is perhaps the most interesting one.
There's some other things that I kind of know are a thing, but never really fully understood. And the best way I think to realize that you don't understand something is when your kids ask you a question about it, and then you need to explain it in very simple terms. And, you know, they always say, if you can't explain it simply, it means you don't understand it. So on that note, the other day when we were cleaning out some stuff in the kitchen, I, you know, took out a set of my macaroni that someone gave us for our wedding, which we don't use. And my daughter's like, what's that little tiny cup? It's so cute. And I was like, well, you know, it's my macaronim. And, you know, this is what we do. That some people, you know, at the end of the meal, they put a little bit, like a little bit of hand washing on their fingers before benching. And she was like, why? And I told her the reason that I remembered, which I don't know if this is the full reason, but it related to melach stomit, which is a type of salt apparently from the Dead Sea region that people sometimes had on their table. And apparently it constituted a sort of danger for people, because if you touch this melach stomit and then touch your eyes, you could go blind. So then she kind of freaked out and she was like, wait, am I going to go blind? Because I don't do that. And I was like, well, you know, I don't think that now it's really a danger, and that's not something that we, you know, need to worry about now. We don't have that kind of salt. And I'm not sure if even back then, if they understood the same thing health-wise that we understand now. And then I realized I wasn't actually sure why we do Maya Macharoni. And if it was something that was, you know, based on the medical reality of the time, which maybe now we know other information, or if it was a different, you know, spiritual reason, like Ruach Ra'ah, maybe that was why we do it and has nothing to do with any sort of, you know, health danger, or if it was something that was completely something else. So if anyone has any ideas about what that could be, and then I can not sound like an idiot to my kid, that would be great.
Well, as far as I know, there are two reasons that are given for Maya Macharonim. One is, as you say, Melech Stomit. And then the discussion is always, well, why don't we wash Maya Macharonim? Well, because we don't have Melech Stomit on our table anymore. So then we don't need to get rid of it. We're not worried about the danger. We're not worried about the salt doing damage because we don't have it to begin with. So then what's the issue? The other reason, which I think is perhaps, I don't know, it's more of a chicken and egg kind of answer, perhaps, like which came first. But there's a verse, it says, "V'nekdashi b'toch b'nei Yisrael, v'yitem kedoshim." There's two verses that are bookends. And the idea is that since we begin the meal with the kedusha of washing, we should also close the meal with the kedusha of washing. So again, like, did that come to give a more Torah explanation of why we're washing from the Melech Stomit? Maybe, I don't know. Anybody who's listening, who has ever taken Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik's course on Rishonim, he does a tremendously long and very in-depth, careful analysis of the Rishonim on Maya Macharonim. And it's fascinating and is worth, I don't know, finding an article or something that's been written about it. But that kind of like getting down to the intricacies of each commentary, it doesn't answer your daughter, right? The answer to your daughter is, as I've said, like, well, we don't do Maya Macharonim anymore. And for those who do, either they're keeping the minhag alive, right? Because we like to do that, meaning the Melech Stomit minhag, or they're following this idea of bookending your meal with Kedusha. I will just add, because somebody's going to say, but women, right? So women have the same obligation. Yes, the same obligation in Maya Macharonim as men do, whatever it is, meaning either there's an obligation or there isn't an obligation, but whatever that level of obligation is, it applies equally to men and to women. But very, very often you'll see a Maya Macharonim circulate a table and the women do not wash. It just goes straight by them right to the men. And, you know, I looked into this at some point and the answer seems to be there's a presumption that the women would wash before they came back to the table.
Doing the dishes.
Yeah, no, not doing that before the dishes, right? Meaning just clearing and then coming back to bench. So they would rinse their hands then, which on the one hand is maybe not fair, but on the other hand is also perhaps a description of reality. And it suggests that those women like were in fact complying with Maya Macharonim. What happens if you're a guest and you didn't help? First of all, you should help. But if you didn't help, right? Like then you should wash Maya Macharonim with whatever comes around. If it is your practice to wash Maya Macharonim. Right, nowadays, again, most of us do not, at least most of us in my circles.
I find very interesting, and in prep for this podcast, I did a little reading. And by a little reading, I mean between the children and the husband and the dishes and the kitchen that needed to be done today, I read a few websites on the history of hand washing. And what I found was, other than references to the Israelites, was that washing or bathing was with oils or cosmetics. There was not a lot of conversation about water and washing and purifying and hygiene. Not for a long time anyway in history. So there was a lot of, like I said, you know, bathing in the oils of this and the oils of that or cosmetics in Egypt. But there wasn't a lot of references to water. And I find it fascinating that our religion and our culture is so involved in water. We have mikvah. We have, as you said, the hand washing. Last week's parsha in Vayakha, I mean, it's last week now. Okay, I don't know what it is when we get this out, but it's last week now. When Hashem was describing the Avodah, and he said, when Aaron and the sons have to wash, whenever they enter the Ol Moed, they have to wash their hands and their feet so they don't die. And of course, everyone was like, you know, quoting this because of Corona. Oh my gosh, wash your hands. And it's this week's Parsha. It's, oh my God, what's the Gematria? Like, everyone was going a little crazy. And if Mashiach shows up tomorrow, you can absolutely laugh at me. I'm fine with that. But people were talking about that a lot. And it really just made me think about, especially now, by the way, that they closed the men's mikvahs. And they're talking about, you know, what should women do if they have to go to the mikvah because of Corona and this and that. And Water is such a part of our lives that we do it from the morning until the night, every time we leave the bathroom. It's really interesting to me how centralized Judaism is when it comes to water and washing and ritual. And I think especially with this isolation, you're so internally focused and you're so inside the house all the time and you're watching the kids, and it even is more pronounced to me how much we deal with water and this ritual about water. I mean, look at the Pesach Seder that we're getting ready for. Orchatz and Orchatz and Orchatz, all those talking about those jokes and the memes, Anne. Orchatz is when you wash your hands, which usually comes at the second part of the Seder, but now they've put it after each part of the Seder. So instead of like 10 parts, you've got 20, and half of them are washing your hands, because now we're supposed to wash our hands for at least 20 to 60 seconds, depending who you speak to get rid of the virus. Gloria Gaynor actually did a whole video with her song, I Will Survive, washing her hands. It's quite cute. I think it's interesting how it has brought to light this whole importance of washing and water and cleansing. And I would just say, of course, we always compare the Torah to water and Mayim Chayim, and human beings are 70 to 75% water, and the earth is 70 to 75% water, and it has been pouring in Israel for the past week. So there's a lot of water going on. It's a very timely topic. And it's very interesting to think about it now that you're home with your children. You could talk about this all day long.
So I was thinking
nothing else to do.
So I was thinking about this water issue in the context of also being home and being very much aware of, like, we're concerned about the question of contamination. It's like a very known path now, right, of how this virus transmits. And very often there's a discussion of, like, you know, but the Jews, they poison the wells, right? And there's a concern about the water supply, and God forbid. And now we have an overflowing, okay, I'm exaggerating, but, you know, the Kinneret is doing just so well with all the rainfall of this year that there's an abundance of rain, to the extent that there are now wildflowers in the Dead Sea area. That's unheard of. And there's this blooming and abundance of water, and everybody is in their homes. Well, and I feel like, don't we want to go out and, like, enjoy the bounty of Eretz Yisrael kind of thing? Okay, we're going to stay home.
It's hard.
So water is really central to everything we do. On the one hand, it's very mundane because it's just part of our life, something that is always there that we are dealing with all the time, touching all the time. On the other hand, you know, with all of these rituals that we put around water, we kind of elevate it to something that has a lot more meaning. And I have an interesting story about that, actually. When I was in high school and I had learned, you know, recently about hand washing, my grandmother passed away. And I decided that in her memory, I was going to take on something extra or something more and be more makpid, whatever you say that in English, be more careful about certain things that I was doing. So I figured I was going to take on hand washing as the thing that I was going to be a lot more careful about, you know, washing hands after all the different things that you're supposed to or before or whatever. And so that was something that I took on. And later, I learned that my grandmother, before she passed away, she had all sorts of requests, and one of them was that she requested to not have the Tahara purification rituals performed on her body after she died. And she was adamant she didn't want that. In the end, you know, they still did perform the Tahara rituals on her. But I only learned this many years later. And so to me, to hear that, it was kind of closure in a way. You know, I felt like I kind of randomly picked this thing that I thought, oh, I connect to this, and I'm going to do it in memory of my grandmother. And it was pretty cool. It felt like a tikkun in a way, like a kind of, you know, correcting this imbalance in the world. I had chosen this thing for her, which she herself, you know, maybe needed a boost in. So wow. That was pretty cool. And I'm not the kind of person who's into, like, woo-woo stories, but, like, that was a pretty woo-woo story.
I have a not woo-woo story about how I also, in high school, took on Netilat Yadayim. It's hard to say you took it on when it's something that we're supposed to do, right? But that's exactly what happened to me. I was in an NCSY Shabbaton in 10th grade. And the advisors asked this group of us, like in the shiur or whatever, you know, which of you people here wash Netilat Yadayim every morning? And I thought I should answer yes, because that was, like, you know, reputation.
That was the right answer.
The right answer, exactly. So I said yes. And from then I did, because I had said yes. It might not have been an accurate statement about my past, but since I had said that, I do. Like, that was the commitment to it. So since then I have done so.
You just do tshuva in that minute. Anne, amazing story.
I mean, it wasn't tshuva. I was 14. You know, like, it was learning. It was just the beginning. Lo lagzim.
Rachel, how old were you when your grandmother passed away and you did this whole thing?
I think I was 16, maybe 15, 16, something like that.
I have no interesting stories about hand washing. Sorry.
There's always time to make some. You could tell your kids about that time when there was a big plague and everyone was washing their hands and you connected to something. And from then on,
You've
been a big advocate of hand washing.
Funny story about hand washing very quickly that you just reminded me of.
Yes, you do have.
This is the funny story. One of my boys, I don't remember which one, decided that he was going to put, I guess one of his rebbies told him to do this, a bowl and a natlan, a hand washing cup, under his bed. I did not know this. And I went to say good morning to my child and spilled it all. I'm like, what the heck is this? And he's like, oh, mommy, that was my water for washing. I'm like, you are 2 feet from the bathroom.
Well, because there is an idea that you should not walk 4 feet before having washed your hands. So if you have a bowl right next to your bed, then you can do that and then go about your,
so
you
know, sweet.
Walking around your room.
I ruined that plan for him and I told him that wasn't happening again.
Yeah, a good plan is if you want to have a bowl of water near your or next to your bed, then don't put it where people are going to walk.
They're cute though, aren't they? Well, I hope that in a week and two and three, I'll be able to say that my kids are still cute because Bezat Hashem, we're going to be together for a long time. Hopefully we will all get through this. Hopefully you at home will get through this and we will all be able to laugh about it later, just as we are making jokes now. But I know it isn't easy. We all know it's not easy. We're here with you. And hopefully you can spend your time by going back in the Chokhmat Nashim podcast and catching up.
It's a departure from our norm, this topic. But, you know, I think that we all needed a moment just of a breather. And I feel like this is one of that, if nothing else. I imagine we'll be back with you via Zoom at the next Chokhmat Nashim podcast.
So if you have any questions or comments or things that you'd want to chime in with, ideas for topics, or if you just want to chat with us because you're bored in your house or because you're not bored, but you want to not talk to someone who is your child, then please reach out to us. Let us know what you think. Comment on this podcast, on our Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, wherever else you want to talk to us. Also, don't forget to share it with your friends and your family and everyone else who you can't talk to now because they're far away, but you can always send them our podcast. So don't forget to like us everywhere and subscribe and share with everyone and let us know what you think.
Can you hear us now?